All right, that brings us to our speaker. Please help me welcome Keith from Montville Speakers Group.
It's a very, very warm welcome. Thank you. My name is Keith Bauer. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Keith.
And I was told when I come to the podium, I'm supposed to share my experience with you guys. So I'm going to start with an experience I had today that I thought was pretty cool. I got a phone call from a friend of mine. He said, there's a new guy, he's moving into a house, and I don't think there's anybody there to meet him. Do you mind going over there and just meeting him and talk to him and just, you know, help him get settled in? And, you know, I'm reluctant to do things, like when I'm asked to do them, because it, like, interrupts my day. And it was about 1 o'clock, and I had to be here to Quakertown by 9, so it was a little bit of an inconvenience. But I went over there, you know, I went over there to meet the guy. And I get there, and there's a house full of guys there anyways. So I hang out a little bit, and I talk to the guy. And I sit down on the couch, and I'm hanging out with him. And there's this other guy, he comes downstairs, and he's, like, getting ready for work. And I hear him, and he's just mumbling and muttering, like, oh, I don't want to take the bus. Oh, man, I hate taking the bus to work. And, like, I might not look it, but I'm not dumb. Like, I knew it was coming. I knew this guy, like, was about, you know, he wanted to ask me for a ride to work, which I, like I said, I had to be here by 9. I can't be doing that, right? So, you know, I hang out a little bit longer, and I'm sitting there talking to some guys, watching TV with them, and this older gentleman comes walking by, and he's got a cane, and he's kind of hobbling along, and I hear the guy needs to go to work, like, jokingly say to this guy, hey, man, will you give me a piggyback to work? And I was like, oh, man, here it comes. I know it's coming. And he stops. He looks right at me. He's like, hey, man, will you give me a ride to work? And I didn't want to give him a ride to work. But, you know, he's a newcomer as well. So I definitely gave this guy a ride to work. So we get out to the car. And I told him, look, I have to stop somewhere and pick up some paperwork from one of the electricians that does work for us. And he's like, all right, no problem. So on the way there, this guy's spouting off to me everybody in Lancaster County that he can think of that I may know. And I'm like, I don't know that guy, I don't know this guy, I don't know that guy. And he blurts out this name, Jason. Like, this guy, Jason, I do know him, but, like, he's the most irrelevant, you know, person to me in my life. I see this guy maybe once a year, you know? But he tells me, oh, I met him at a coffee shop, and, oh, it's cool, you know Jason, right? I haven't seen this guy once this year. So I get to the place where I'm meeting this guy's name's Bob, this older gentleman. He's one of the electricians we work with, and I get the paperwork for him. And as I'm talking to Bob, this guy comes again in his car, and it's that guy, Jason. And he's like, hey, Keith, how you doing? And I'm like, oh, I'm doing well, man, thanks. He's like, are you working? And I was like, yeah, I'm working. And, I mean, I appreciate his endorsement, but he, like, rolls the window down, like, real abruptly and was like, I highly recommend these guys. Definitely hire them. And, you know, I wasn't applying for a job, but, you know, I appreciated it. And Bob immediately says, oh, is that guy in construction also? And I was like, no. And, you know, me and Bob have talked a little bit before, and I told him that I'm in the program and my story a little bit. And I said, no, that guy actually, he owns some recovery houses in Lancaster County. And, we talked to him a little bit about what that is and stuff. And he turns to me and he goes, oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot you're involved in that kind of stuff, too. He goes, I have 2 grandsons that are struggling really bad. And we start to talk about that a little bit. And I offer my number. I say, if he ever wants to talk to someone who's been through it before, give him my number. We can talk. He's like, oh, well, he's all the way out in California. I was like, that's perfect. I have a friend who just moved to California that can help him get into a treatment center out there. And, like, I say goodbye. I start walking back to the car, and, like, a fire was lit inside of me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know why. Like, I didn't want to do any of this stuff. But, like, for some reason, like, I went to the house. For some reason, I gave this guy a ride to work. For some reason, I listened to him spout off names of people I may or may not know. And then it transitioned into a conversation where I might be able to help somebody. And I get back to the car, and I just, like, rip this new guy's ear off, telling about, like, how awesome this coincidence was. And, like, you know, it's just pretty cool for me. And I start to drive this guy to work. And he starts opening up a little bit, and he starts telling me a little bit about his struggles and what's going on in his life, and I start sharing my experience with him, and I drop him off, And I start to head home, and now I just want to drive home. I just want to get home with my fire by myself and just get to where I got to be. And I get a phone call from a guy I used to sponsor a couple of years ago. I'm like, why the hell is this guy calling me now of all times? I just want to get home. I pick up the phone. I say, hey, man, what's going on? How you doing? You know, small talk a little bit. He tells me, oh, I have a sponsee who just finished his fourth step, and I need some direction taking him through, you know, doing a fifth step with him. And I need some direction doing six and seven and outlining an eighth. And I said, hold on 1 second. I pulled over in a parking lot, and I said, grab your big book, and we got to talk a little bit, you know? And I sit here and tell you that because I didn't want to do any of that stuff, like I said. It all started from, like, just doing something I didn't want to do, which is, like, a friend of mine told me a couple of years ago, dude, just always do the things you don't want to do, because it's usually do those things having the most fun, you know? And that's kind of been going through my head all day today, because I don't know about you guys, but I started playing the game that we play when you're asked to speak somewhere at about noon, and I started thinking about, like, how can I get out of this? Who can I get to cover me? You know, I don't really want to dress up, you know, what can I do? And then that same friend told me also that, you know, when AA shows up, don't ever say no. So, you know, so we're here, you know. I have a sobriety date. It's April 9, 2013. I have a home group. Like Jeff said, it's the Mountville Speaker Group, and it meets in Mountville, Pennsylvania. It's a one-hour speaker meeting, just like this. If you guys are short on newcomers to help, come on out to our meeting. There is an abundance of them. Our meeting's pretty cool, man. It's like four or five home group members that hold that meeting together, and then like 30 new guys and girls. Like it's pretty cool, actually. I have a sponsor who's also a member of that home group. My sponsor took me through 12 Steps to Alcoholics Anonymous, and like I just shared with you, I have the opportunity to sponsor other men in this program. You know, so with that being said, guys, like I said, my home group's in Mountville, Pennsylvania. I'm not from Pennsylvania. I was born and raised in South Florida. I got sober in Pennsylvania, which, from what I hear, is completely backwards. kind of been the theme of my life, doing things backwards. But what I had going on in Florida was I grew up in a house with my mother and my father, who when I was little wasn't there all the time, which is no reason to like why I drank the way I did. I actually didn't even know he wasn't there all the time until I got sober. I have two sisters. They both lived with us as well. My grandmother and grandfather lived about 3 miles down the road. And, you know, I never wanted for anything. Everything was provided for me that I needed. There was a lot of love, an abundance of love, maybe too much love. I don't really know. But I had this thing going on when I was young, even before I drank, where I couldn't feel that love. You know, the disconnected from all that love around me, I've heard it described as, and that fits for me, right? I was disconnected from the people that loved me the most, you know? My mother would cook dinner every Sunday night, and we'd have Sunday dinner as a family. The only night of the week we're allowed to keep the TV on during dinner, so if we could watch football games. Can't miss the Miami Dolphins football game. That's right, I said it, the Miami Dolphins. So, you know, but what I would do at dinner is they'd all be talking. My family would be talking back and forth. How was your day? How was school? How was this? How was that? This was great. This wasn't so great. And I would just sit there quiet, and I would just shovel my food into my mouth, eat as quick as I can, similar to, like, just getting out of jail, just still eating really fast. And then I would take my plate, and I would throw it in the sink, and I'd run back to my room so I could be all by myself, away from all the people that loved me that I didn't feel comfortable around. And I would still feel just as uncomfortable. Maybe even more uncomfortable. And I was a kid. I didn't know why I felt this way. I just knew that I felt this way. I was in elementary school. I'd go to school, and I felt different. So I felt like you guys thought I was different. So I'm going to be different. You know, you guys listen to the teacher. You do your homework. You participate in class. Like, I'm not participating in class. I'm not listening to the teacher. I am not doing any homework, and I'm picking fights with people, you know, and I'm getting suspended from school, and it's elementary. And, you know, obviously my parents don't want me to be going down that path. So, like I said, I have an older sister. You know, they would talk to my sister's friends, mothers and fathers, like, oh, what do you do with your son? He's about Keith's age. And they'd be like, oh, well, we put Billy Bob in sports, you know? And, you know, so let's try that with Keith, you know? My father came to me one day, or he was sitting on the couch. I came in the room. I remember this, too. You know, I came in the room. He was watching the Miami Dolphins play the New York Giants. And he sat me down and he explained the game of football to me. And he said, do you want to play? And I was like, I don't think so. He said, you know, but he talked to me a little bit. He was my dad, so I trust him. I said, all right, sign me up. And it was really cool. Football and sports took me out of myself. I was the guy who threw himself into it. I got to practice early. I stayed late. Loved game day. You know, it was great because while I was on that field, I was a part of something. My mind wasn't racing, and I was okay. Unfortunately, even in Florida, football season doesn't last 365 days a year. I had to figure out, like, what was going on when the season was over, and it came back. Like, I came back to, like, that uncomfortable feeling, that feeling of not being okay. I'd lay awake at night, like, wondering, like, the most strangest things, having the conversation with myself about, like, what I'm going to do tomorrow, what didn't I do right today, just, I'm sure you guys know what I'm talking about. You know, I had a friend I grew up with. His name was Nick. He lived around the corner. And then I had a friend, Joel, who had a brother, and they lived like three houses over. And I was out one day with my mother somewhere. And when I got home, I saw Nick and Joel sitting on the stoop, and I walked over to them. They were looking quite shady this day. So I walked up to them, and I was like, guys, why are you looking so shady? And Joel was like, oh, man, does your mom have a liquor cabinet? And I was like, no, my mother doesn't have a liquor cabinet. Why? He's like, my mother's got a liquor cabinet. And he's like, Nick got into my mom's liquor cabinet today and took a bunch of shots. And, you know, he started hanging from the doorways and climbing under the furniture, acting like a real monkey. And I was like, what? And I was like, well, when can I take some shots and act like a monkey? Like, I want to do that, you know? I want to be a part of what you guys are doing. And Joel was like, well, I don't know, tomorrow? I was like, all right, let's do it. And like to them, it was just like, okay, tomorrow. But for me, it was a big deal. I couldn't wait to get over there and start drinking. I didn't even know what drinking was. I didn't know what it did to you, did for you. I didn't know anything about it, really. Tomorrow came, and after school, I went over to Joel's house. We got in Joel's mom's liquor cabinet. Nick took a couple shots, and then I took a couple shots. And then Nick took a couple shots, and then I took a couple shots. And sure enough, there goes Nick, hanging from the door frames, climbing under the furniture, acting like a real monkey. And I took a couple more shots, and strangely, I didn't act like a monkey, you know? I felt a little tipsy. I couldn't walk as straight, but I didn't get the same thing that Nick got. You know, I didn't act like a monkey. I acted like myself. That's what I acted like. Acted like myself, or at least who I wanted to be at that time. And that's the effect that alcohol produces for me. Nick was drinking to act out of himself. And once I started drinking, I started drinking to fit into myself. You know, a friend of mine says it like this, and I agree with it. Like, my shoulders went back, my head went up, and I could walk anywhere. I could be whoever I wanted to be. And thank goodness for that, actually, you know? Thank God for alcohol, because if I didn't find alcohol, they probably would have locked me up a long time ago and threw away the key, because I did not feel okay. I was pretty much crazy at a young age. You know, so I start drinking at a young age, and I start getting into drugs, and I start getting into trouble, and I get put on probation, and then I can't not drink. So I violate probation, and they send me to this, what was it called? They had a nice way of dressing it, a youth academy. That's what they called it. I went to a youth academy in South Florida, and I got, like, during my intake, they were like, all right, so here's where you live, here's where the cafeteria is, and then in about an hour, you're going to meet with a drug and alcohol professional. And I was like, well, you're looking at one, you know. But I met with this lady about an hour later, and she started asking me all these questions, and I was, you know, I was honest with the answers. I was honest when she asked me questions. I told her what was going on. I didn't lie, because, I mean, at this point, I'm in jail. What are they going to arrest me more, you know? So you know, I answered all her questions honestly, and then she looks at me and she says, Keith, I think you have a drug and alcohol problem. And I hit her with my favorite line. And I said, Miss Gretchen, I don't have a drug and alcohol problem. I could stop if I wanted to. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to. And I believe that. You know what I mean? I really believed it. Like deep down in my core, I believe that was the truth. And again, she looks at me and she goes, Keith, you're 16 years old. You have a felony on your record. You're sitting in jail. Your family wants nothing to do with you. You should probably want to stop. And even at 16, that made sense, but at the same time, it didn't. Because at that point in my life, the effects that alcohol was producing were still outweighing the consequences. You know? And that's, you know, that made more sense, you know, at the time. So I got out, you know, I got out of the youth academy, and I was on probation, and they gave me a meeting sheet. They said one of your conditions of probation is you have to go to AA meetings, and you know, it was whatever was a condition of my probation. So I did it. I showed up to your meetings with my meeting slip, and I would get it signed. I forget how many meetings I had to go to a week, but you know, I thought like it was gonna help. You know what I mean? Because they had told me a little bit about these meetings. Go to AA meetings, and you'll be all right. But I came to the meetings. I came to your meetings, and I heard people talking about like not drinking and like how crappy their day was. And like I got that because I wasn't drinking, and my days were still crappy. And like that's all I heard was don't drink, keep coming to meetings, and like that's what I was doing. I was not drinking. I was coming to meetings, but like while I wasn't drinking, all I could think about was drinking. You know what I mean? And then I got, like, I just had this obsession where all I could do was obsess over drinking. So I drank, you know? Didn't want to help the waterfall. But, yeah, so that's what I did. I drank, you know, because without it, like, my life was worse off than it was with it. Like, the solution to my problem, as we say, was alcohol. It wasn't me. I took the alcohol away, and I was just as crazy, just as miserable, probably worse. You know, that's how that went. When I got out of this youth academy, my friends all started going off to college, which was pretty cool for them. I also went to their college. You know, they attended. I just went there to drink. And, you know, I don't know if you guys know this, but college is an awesome place to drink. It was a good way to, like, hang out with some people, drink who drank hard, you know. Unlike me, who was drinking at 4 a.m., once everybody had gone home, no social situation whatsoever. I'm not drinking to hang out. I'm not drinking to, you know, party or to fit in. I'm drinking to overcome a craving, you know, an obsession. And it also got me away from my hometown for a little bit. And, you know, I'd go back to my hometown. And stop me if you've heard this before, but I met a girl. revolutionized my life. And, you know, it was great because we had so much in common. She liked the same music as me. She liked movies. And she liked to drink. And, like, for me, that's all I needed, you know? So immediately, you know, she moves in with me. And she's actually in Florida trying to do it the way everybody else does it and try to get sober. But she met me, so I deterred that plan. You know, and she lived with me for about a year. And one day she comes to me and she says, I think I want to go home. I want to go back to Philadelphia. I was only supposed to be here for 3 months. And I said, well, okay. I've never been to Philadelphia. Can I come? You know? And she said, sure, why not? You know, because in my mind, like, Florida was my problem. I was probably about, I don't know, 19, 20 years old at this point. I tried to do things in Florida. It wasn't working. All the police knew my name. My parents didn't really like me very much, and I was done with it. Washed my hands with Florida, and I got on a train to Pennsylvania. And when we got here, of course, like we had this like awesome idea of like getting sober on the way. I don't know how, but we're gonna get sober on the way. And when we get here, our life is gonna start. I'm gonna meet her family. They're gonna love me, and life's gonna be great. And I can't really paint the picture, but take whatever I just said and imagine the exact opposite. Because that's what happened. You know, about a year into living up here, she comes to me and she's like, hey, we're pregnant. We're going to have a baby. And I was like, awesome. Like, you know, I thought it was a great idea. Still delusional as it comes. And because in my eyes, here's what I thought. Right? Like, when I was a little kid, I don't remember why, but like my mom would always have to take me to work with her, and she was a preschool teacher, so I grew up around kids. I always liked kids, you know. And in my eyes, like, this is what adults do. They grow up, they get a girlfriend, they move in together, and you have a kid, and everything's wonderful, and blah, 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 blah. And more importantly, like, for me, in my mind, like, here was the reason. Here was the reason that I've been looking for, you know, for years. I finally have a reason to stop drinking and stop, you know, doing what I'm doing. As if, like, the broken, like, hearts and the disappointed family and going to jail wasn't a reason enough, but, like, you know, I finally had my reason. She told me, my son, I was having a son, and she told me the delivery date. And I made a firm resolution, if you will, to stop doing the drugs I was doing by that date. And I was going to get a house, I was going to get a good job, and I was going to be sober, and I was going to be a good father, a good boyfriend, and all that. Well, I'm pretty persistent, so I got the house, I got the good job, and I'm like, I'm going to detox myself from these drugs by drinking. And then I'll stop drinking on the day he's born, and everything will be okay. And I'll sit here and tell you, the day my son was born, I was drunk in the delivery room. And I couldn't quite figure it out because I had made the decision to stop. You know, so my son was born, and I had that job I was talking about, and I go to work, and I'm drinking during work, and then about a couple weeks later, I'm leaving in the middle of work to go find some stuff that works a little quicker. And then about a couple weeks after that, I'm stealing from that job to support that habit. And I'm baffled and I'm confused and I have no idea how this happened again. And I go off to treatment because everyone told me that, like, that's what I need to do at this point in my life. Go to treatment, get some help, talk to some people that have been there before. So I did. I went to treatment. I did a quick detox, like a 6-day detox. And, you know, alcohol and drugs was removed from me for 6 days. And I left their parking lot and I went and got drunk. I didn't really question it anymore. It wasn't so baffling anymore because at this point in my life, I'm just like okay with it. Like, this is what I do. This is what happens. Okay, let's see how long I can run this out before people want me nowhere near them again. And usually it's not long. So, I mean, this starts my career, if you will, of bouncing in and out of treatment centers, going to prison for a few months or, you know, a year or whatever the case may be, and getting out. I mean, one time I got released from jail on like a Saturday, and they're like, go check in with your probation officer on Monday. And they had seen me before, and they were like, it's one day. Just one day. Don't drink. Don't get high. Don't do anything wrong for one day. And then I don't show up on Monday because I drink. You know? I no longer have the choice in the matter. You know, it's without a solution in my life, like, that's what I do. I search for whatever's going to make me feel okay. But, you know, I'm in and out. And then finally I land in a therapeutic community out in Harrisburg. And I sit through their program for about 38 days, and I do all they tell me to do. It's a behavior modification place, and I you know, modify my behaviors, and I do everything they tell me to do and keep my awareness up, and I listen to all the counselors, and I'm like the group leader and all that fun stuff that we do when we're in treatment. And I go to the counselor's office, and I talk this counselor into letting me do IOP when I leave. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do some outpatient. It's going to be intensive, and I'm going to be okay. And so, I don't know. This guy was like, okay, all right. And I was like, all right, cool. He's like, I just got to check with your probation officer first. And he gets him on the phone. And I never went and met this guy ever. And he was like, how you doing? I was like, oh, I'm doing great. I'm group leader, this and that. He said, all right, well, what's going on? I said, oh, I'm going to do outpatient. And he goes, no, you're not. He goes, how long have you been doing this in and out thing, man? I was like, I don't know. Don't you have it written down somewhere? I don't have a clue. And he says, you're going to go to a halfway house. And I was like, I don't know about that, Mr. Probation Officer. I'm not really into that. And he says, Keith, I have this warrant on my desk with your name on it, and I can serve it if you don't go to the halfway house. And I said, you know what? I love halfway houses. Let's do it, man. And you know, I showed up. That's how I got to Lancaster County, like, I don't know, 8 years ago, 6, 7 years ago, something like that. I just kept shipping me places, I don't know. So I got to this recovery house, and I did, or halfway house, and I did nothing of what they told me to do. You know, in the treatment center, they kept saying, go to meetings, get a sponsor, get a home group, work the 12 steps. And like, I was telling people, hey, go to meetings, work the 12 steps, get a sponsor and a home group. And like, I got to the halfway house, and I wanted nothing to do with any of that, really. I wanted to job search at the library and do nothing, you know. But, you know, one day I walk back to the halfway house, and they're like, you have a phone call. I said, strange. But I went in there, and I got on the phone in the counselor's office. It's my probation officer. He's like, oh, Keith, how's things going over there at the halfway house? And I said, things are going awesome. I have a sponsor. I'm going to meetings. I have a home group. I'm working the 12 steps. And he goes, I just spoke to your counselor. You're not doing any of that. I was like, oh, man, she got me good. All right. All right, yeah, you got me. And he's like, all right, well, you need to do what they're asking you to do, or you're going to go back to jail. And I don't want to go back to jail. I don't know about any of you guys, but I didn't want to go back to jail again. So forcefully, I got a sponsor, you know. I found a guy who, you know, was happy, looked happy. He had a car. He could take me to meetings, very important. He could take me wherever I needed to go. And, you know, he was picking guys up for meetings, you know. So I get this guy to be my sponsor. I ask him, will you sponsor me? He says, absolutely. Throws a big book at me, tells me to read a doctor's opinion, call him the next day. I go home and immediately start to think about what I just did. Because I'm not really sold on this AA thing or like this sponsor thing. But so I come up with a list. I don't know this guy. I just got him because I don't want to go to jail, like I said. So I came up with a long list of things I need to ask this guy. And I said, you know, how old are you? How long have you been sober? How many brothers and sisters do you have? What's your social? Like all these like dumb questions that have no bearing on anything. And he calls me, or I call him the next day, and he told me to. And he says, did you read that? And I said, absolutely, I did. And I didn't even open the book, but I had this list I had to talk to him about. So... you know, he says, cool, I'll be there. And he comes and picks me up that night while everyone else is going to meetings. And we get to wherever we went to. It's like a park, I think. And he's like, grab your big book. And I said, yeah, sure. And I go to open it up. And I'm like, but wait, first I have all these questions for you. And I started hitting him with the questions. You know, how old are you? How many brothers and sisters you have? Like, where are you from? This and that. And he's like, hold on, man. He's like, what's going on? I was like, well, man, I need to know these things right here. Because you're going to, in my eyes, in my head, I'm thinking, you're going to save me. Like, you're going to show me how to live and stuff like that. And he goes, well, man, hold on. He's like, I have a working knowledge of the 12 steps and a relationship with God. Like, isn't that what you're asking for? And, like, at first I was pissed because I felt like I got chumped by this nerd in a sweater vest. But looking back, like, that's what I was asking for. You know, I don't know how to live. The outline to live is in that book. Will you show me? You know. So he started to take me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we started reading through the book. We started going through the steps. And I gave up. I don't know, somewhere in there I gave up. And probably around the inventory, somewhere around there. But like I was faking it really good, you know. I probably threw a few things down in the notebook. But what it boils down to, man, is I was doing AA, you know, with one foot in AA and one foot in the bar, and that just doesn't work, not for me, anyways. You know, needless to say, I relapsed, and I disappeared. You know, I disappeared for about 3 years. and things got really rough. Didn't draw a sober breath. Had another child, went back to jail. Destroyed many more relationships, you know, like a tornado, like they say. Just rolling through, causing destruction. But mainly, I stayed away due to my pride, due to my ego. I didn't want to admit to you guys I really needed your help. And I knew I did. I just didn't want to come back. I was full of fear again. And I didn't want to show my face in Alcoholics Anonymous. But secretly, I knew the solution was here. But I just, you know, ego kept me away. You know, so about 3 years went by, and I end up, I call my mother and father. I'm like almost 30 years old. I call mom and dad in Florida. They can't see me. They don't know what's going on. I talk them into allowing me to come back to live in their house in Florida, right? So, you know, they let me. They say, okay. And I get there. And then once again, though, guys, like, I'm tired of this. Like, I'm almost 30 at this point, and, like, I'm exhausted. I don't want to keep doing this, man. So, and, like, I really, and again, I really meant it. I wanted to stop drinking. And I went to Florida, and my parents have in their backyard, there's a pool and, like, a nice deck, you know, trees and everything. And my first day there, I was laying out on the deck, on the lawn chair, sunglasses on, headphones in, just hanging out in the sun, and I felt absolutely miserable with nothing inside me. You know, I did not feel okay. And I was like, this can't go on, you know? So the next day I got up and I drank, and I went back to their house, and I went back to the deck, and I laid in the same lawn chair. You know, I had my headphones in, sunglasses on, hanging out in the sun, and I still did not feel okay. Like, it was no longer producing the effect that made me feel okay. And I got crushed. I got whomped with, like, this fear. It just came over my whole body. Because I didn't know what to do. And I started to make sense of what people had been telling me. You know, the fact that all this stuff on the outside isn't the problem. That the problem's in here. But I had a couple more ideas. I was like, maybe it's quality of product. I don't know. So I went back out, and I disappeared from my family's house for about a week. Picked a horrible time to come back to their house, by the way. They were all sitting at the table when I walked in. And there was my mother with the same tears in her eyes that she's been crying for 30 years, you know. And she looks at me, you know, and she says, Keith, you got to go. And I said, Ma, no big deal. Like, you kicked me out when I was young. I know where to go. I know who to see. I know where to stay. And she goes, no, you got to leave Florida. She had a plane ticket for me. I was a little set back because I'd never been kicked out of a state before. But I agreed, you know. And just being a little punk, I looked at my father, like, this man who, like, introduced me to the game of football that I loved, and in my eyes, like, a hero. He's like my father, you know what I mean? So I looked at him just being like, oh, I don't know. I said, hey, Dad, why do you hate me so much? And he looked back at me, and he said, I hate you because, and I didn't hear a word he said after. That crushed me, you know? That got me on that plane. That got me back to Pennsylvania. I got back up here, ran it out for a couple more days until the treatment center could pick me up. And I went back to a treatment center. They allowed me about 20-something days there. And they said, what do you want to do? And I said, counselor, who I've met one time, I want to go back to my house, which is in Westchester, Pennsylvania. And I'll do outpatient, and everything's going to be okay. And she said, okay, that sounds like a good idea. Mm-hmm. And I went back out to my group, and I sat down, and I don't know what came over me, but I got back up. When I went back into her office, I knocked on the door, and I said, hey, I'm lying. I got nothing, you know? She's like, all right, well, come in. And we talked a little bit, and she's like, well, where do you want to go? And I said, I don't know. I said, a couple of years ago, I met some guys in Alcoholics Anonymous. and you know, one of them owns some houses now, and maybe I can get into one of those. She said, do you have any money? Because you need money to get into these places. And I looked at her and I was like, no, I don't have any money. What kind of alcoholic do you think I am? So she says, well, you know, I don't know. I was like, just let me try, please. She says, of course. So I pick up the phone. I'm just going to, real quick, I lived in one of these houses before, and the guy had to kick me out because I was selling drugs out of it, and he had to kick a door down to get one guy out who overdosed, and it was just this whole mess, and I have the balls to call this guy on the phone without any money and ask for help. That's what kind of guy I am. But I call him up, right? And he doesn't recognize me at first, and then he realizes who I am. And then my counselor gets back on the phone, and he goes, I don't even need to do an interview with this guy. I know this guy. I'll absolutely help this guy. And I was blown away. Because that's what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't ever turn our backs on each other, you know? I ended up back in Lancaster County, and I wanted to do things a little different, maybe because someone told me to, or maybe it was, I'd like to tell you it was my idea, but it was probably because someone told me to. I was going to die if I didn't, and I felt it, and I knew it to be true. And, you know, get a sponsor, get a home group, go to meetings, work the 12 steps. First day out, I got a sponsor. First night out, I went to a meeting, right? The first meeting I went to, my sponsor and a group of guys that he was hanging out with, they were bringing a meeting into a treatment center, and they were sharing their experience. And this is the kind of stuff that I was doing a couple years before with my old sponsor and the group of guys I was hanging out with. We were going into to treatment centers and psych wards and juvenile facilities and everything, and just trying to bring a meeting in, try to carry a message. And these guys were still doing this stuff, so I thought to myself, there might be something to this helping other people thing, you know? I went home that night. The next day, I picked up the phone. I asked my sponsor to take me through the 12 steps. He said, absolutely. Read Dr. Penny, gave me a call tomorrow. You know, and that this time, that's what I did. You know, we opened up the big book, and we started going through it. And there, I learned some things about myself that I didn't know, that I've been questioning for years. In there, it explains to me, like, why my sister can pick up a beer Friday night, drink it, throw it away, open another beer, drink it, throw it away, go to bed, wake up Saturday, and go about her weekend. But I pick up a beer, I open it, I drink it, and I throw it away, and I drink the next one, and I throw it away, and I don't stop until my body physically shuts down or I end up in jail or treatment. And it was all there in this book the whole time that I didn't even want to read. You know, my sponsor took me through the steps, and without even realizing what was going on, my life started to change for the better. You know, I started to gain friends. I started to gain things like a job. That was a big one. I was very unemployable. I was a very good one-day employee. I've had many one-day jobs where I'd go to your place of employment. I'd work for one day, maybe the whole day, and then show up 2 weeks later, like, someone owes me $63. Yeah. You know, but you know, I held this job for quite some time. You know, and then I moved on from that job. I've had some pretty cool things happen. One thing I saw, and I wasn't like okay with that first, was all the people I got sober with are up here in Pennsylvania, and they started going through the steps and making amends to their families. You know, we all have that, like, that weighs on us, the things we did to our families. And they were going out, again, sober, going through 12 steps, making amends to their family. My family lived in Florida. So I asked myself, do I call? Do I write a letter? How do I deal? He said, no, we make direct amends. You know, you're going to have to wait. And I was like, oh, man, that stinks. Okay, whatever. So I had to wait on those, the ones that weighed on me the most. And about maybe a year into my sobriety, I get a phone call from my dad. Again, the same guy that told me he hates me, right? I get a phone call from my dad, and he says, hey, Keith, I think I want to come visit you. I was like, okay. all right, Dad, that's cool. You know, he's like, is there any hotels? My dad, you think I'm shot out? You should meet my dad. But he's like, are there any hotels in Pennsylvania? I'm like, Dad, you don't have to stay at a hotel. I bought a house by this point. I said, Dad, you can come stay with me. He was like, oh, that's different. All right, I'll give you a call back in a week. And he hung up. And he calls back and he goes, hey, your mother wants to come. And I was like, oh, man, all right. Great, you know, set it up and come up. I told my sponsor about it. I think he goes, oh, well, great, you get to make those amends now. I was like, oh, I don't want to make them anymore. Like, I got full of fear. Like, you know, make things right. And I'll tell you what, man, my family came up here. I got a chance to sit down with my mother, make direct amends. It was pretty cool. She's my mom, mama boy, whatever. Got a little emotional. The Eagles, however, the Eagles were playing the Cardinals, and I went to my sponsor's house to watch the game with my mom and my dad. And during halftime, I asked my father if he'd step outside with me, and said, yeah, so we went outside, and we sit down, and like, in my head, like, I've built this up for so long, you know what I mean? Like, this is, like, it, and I sit him down, and I start hitting him with the spiel, you know, and I'm telling him, like, how I harmed him, and then I get, oh, this is how I'm going to make things right. And he stops me. And he goes, Keith, I know what you're doing. And I'm like, no, Pop, you got no clue what I'm doing. Listen. And he goes, no, you listen. And he goes, back when you were a kid, when you were real little, I was in and out of your life. And I was like, I vaguely remember that. And he goes, I had a problem with drinking. And I said, I didn't really know that, Dad, you know? And he says, yeah, he's like, he starts sharing his experience with me. He starts telling me about how he couldn't stop drinking, and how he went from liquor to beer, and then beer back to liquor, and how my mother threatened to leave him multiple times, and he couldn't stop drinking, and how he got a DUI, and that wasn't enough, and he couldn't stop drinking, and then he was in and out of treatment centers, and then he told me he came to AA, and he told me he got a sponsor, and he told me AA saved his life. And he told me that he wouldn't have been able to be the father to me that he is if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was just blown away, you know. I thought the amends was, you know, I've always been told the amends is for the other person. I was doing it to get some stuff off my chest, and here was the amends my father was making to me. You know, it's been an awesome journey so far. Like I said, who knows why we end up where we are. I show up because my sponsor tells me to show up, you know, not because I want to. You know, I get a chance to hang out with some of my best friends. I have a couple jobs now. I have a relationship with my son. I don't really need for anything now. The coolest thing I think I could say is all that stuff that I just mentioned is cool, I guess. I'm not really sure. But I have this thing now, and it's this peace inside of me. You know, I can go to bed at night and put my head on my pillow and fall right to sleep. You know, I hit my knees. I ask God every night to help me be a little bit better of a man tomorrow than I was today. And then I wake up and I go about my day trying to be of service to God and His children to the best of my ability. And my ability is pretty poor on most days, but I do my best because in the promises it says if I do that, everything I need will be provided for. So I don't know, guys. That's it. Thanks for letting me hang out.